Greetings, my friends, and welcome to the Paula Gordon Show, conversations with people at the leading edge. I'm Paula. When someone says power, most of us think political power or economic power, and we may feel rather helpless in the face of both. Our guest, Malcolm Gladwell, says that's too bad, because he reports what really matters is not politics or economics, it's social power that matters. And he's certain that we all have social power. In his book, The Tipping Point, Mr. Gladwell reports how major changes can come from seemingly insignificant places, like everyday ideas, arrangements, groups, and conversations, chance meetings, and regular people. He says three particular kinds of people are critical to creating a tipping point: connectors, salespeople, and mavens.
If you think about mavens, you know, mavens have been studied by economists, this kind of person who knows everyone, who knows everything, rather. And one of the things that's interesting about them is that they are not simply experts. We know who the experts are. The thing that sets a maven apart is they are an expert, but they are also driven by a very powerful altruistic streak. They want to share the knowledge. They want to help their friends. That's what they're all about. Helping their friends. And one of the reasons their friends listen to them is that they know that it's altruistic. The maven isn't in it to make money. They're not in it. They're not part of some corporate scheme. They're not signing them up and getting bonus points or something. They're doing it, you know, why does my brother tell me about computers? Because he loves me.
Malcolm Gladwell is a staff reporter for The New Yorker magazine and a former business and science writer at The Washington Post. He was born in England and grew up in Canada, where he earned a degree in history from the University of Toronto. Mr. Gladwell's unusually interesting stories in The New Yorker have captured Bill Russell's and my attention over the years. So when Mr. Gladwell published his book, The Tipping Point, we decided it was time we get acquainted. We were delighted when Mr. Gladwell invited us to join him at The New Yorker's offices just off Times Square in New York City, to explore further how little things can make big differences. Malcolm Gladwell, I find that I am more or less boundlessly curious about how people meet. Mm-hmm. And when I say, how did you meet your spouse or your significant other or your business partner or whatever, people never tell me that they were living in a time of great change. They don't tell me about the information age. They don't tell me about transportation changing. What they tell me is, I sat next to this guy who had really beautiful eyes. Mm-hmm. Or my aunt gave a party and I showed up. Mm-hmm. Or these really simple kinds of things. And I wondered as I went through The Tipping Point, you talk about how little things can make a big difference. It seems to me either you have just told us something we all know and have forgotten, or you have come across incredibly big new ideas. Which is it? Or is it both?
Well, I'd like to think that it was the second. I would be afraid to think that it was the first, but I suspect it's a little bit of both.
Yes.
Actually, I'm not afraid of it being the first. There is nothing earth-shattering about some of these ideas. They're commonsensical, but they are things we've forgotten. One of the things I'm very interested in this book is in describing what I call social power. And by social power, I just mean what you've been talking about, the kinds of ideas, arrangements, groupings, pairings that arise out of the kind of conversations we have, the chance meetings we have, the people who put us in touch with other people. And that kind of power I sort of contrast with, say, economic power or political power, which are, when we talk about power, it's what we talk about normally. We talk about the guy wearing the suit who occupies the corner office, or the man with $1 million, or the woman with, you know, all the money in the bank. I don't think at the end of the day those kinds of power are the ones that really matter. I think what matters is the kind of influence that arises out of these chance encounters and friendships, and the person who you admire is in the end much more important in your life than the person who you envy.
Oh, do that again. The person you admire
in your life is much more important than the person that you envy. The old idea about influence was that the person that matters was the person who lived in the big house, you know, on top of the hill, right?
Yeah, old-time power. Yeah.
When the guy in the big house on top of the hill drove a Cadillac, you decided that you wanted to drive a Cadillac. I think that idea in the present day is nonsense. I don't think that it's our, you know, there are people that we look up to because they have more degrees or more money. I think the people we look up to are the people who we respect and trust and who are part of our world but who have a kind of special place for us. That's what makes us work and tick and do the things that we do. And
the first thing you describe seems to me to be right at the heart of a consumerist culture, that you have to envy somebody or you won't go buy something, and then it won't drive the economy and then everything stops.
Yeah. Or it's also a remnant of a much more hierarchical world, and a world that also where we were much more, I think it's a mark of an unsophisticated view of human nature. We got caught up in this idea that money was everything, and that status was everything in the kind of post-war era. And a lot of what my book is about is in saying, you know what, human beings are a lot more complicated than that. Thankfully, that's not what motivates most of us.
This is a strikingly nuanced view of power. I think most of us assume that when everything else fails, we lapse back to brute force, either physical or its proxy economic. And, and what you're describing, what you describe in your, so well in your book, is a much more nuanced appraisal of power, both in terms of who exercises it and the forms it takes, the manifestations of it.
Well, I had this insight. This came to me when I was following around a woman who I talk about in the book, this woman Lois Weisberg.
That's how we found you, when you wrote about her 3 or 4 years ago in the mid to late 90s in the New Yorker.
Look at this. Yes.
Actually, I violated your copyright and made copies of it to give it away. It was just remarkable.
She is, for those readers who don't, listeners who don't know, she's this woman who knows everyone. And I was fascinated with her because in the city of Chicago, it is almost impossible to find someone who, if they don't know her directly, knows someone who knows her directly. She's just one of these remarkable characters. And I was trailing her around Chicago, and one day, she now works for the city of Chicago. She's the commissioner of cultural affairs. And she had a breakfast meeting with two people, the mayor and a very prominent Chicago developer. Three of them were sitting around a table, and I was watching them and listening to them talk. And I said, well, here we have the three kinds of power. Right, we got the mayor, who has formal authority. We've got the developer, who's got tons and tons of money, and we have this woman. Who? What does she have? She knows people. I said, who is the most powerful and important person in the room right now? And you know what? It's her. Neither of them can do their job without her. You can have all the money in the world, but if you don't have, and all the formal power, but if you don't have a network of people who admire you and trust you and will work with you, you have nothing. Or if you don't have someone who has that network, you have nothing. They need her. And we, you know, we have consistently, and I have very strong feelings about this, we have consistently devalued that kind of social power, I think for a number of reasons, but for one reason above all else, and that is that it is the kind of power that women have held. It is a way in which we have devalued the role that women play in our society.
Oh, boy, do we have more to say when we come back with Malcolm Gladwell. Bill Russell and I are here with Malcolm Gladwell at The New Yorker in New York City. We'll all be back in just a moment. Stay with us.